This is Derek Bros. This is Derek Bros of the Conscious Resistance. I'm here in Standing Rock.
That man is wanted in 5 different countries: Chile, Argentina, Brazil.
We've been fighting a long time. We've all lost so very much. So many loved ones gone.
Don't you fucking tease that horse!
You are not alone. There are pockets of resistance all around the planet. We are at the brink. We've all stayed alive. You have no idea how important.
Hey, what's up, everyone? This is Derek Bros of the Conscious Resistance Network, and today is Monday, September 21, 2020. I'm here in Morelia, Michoacan. You might be able to hear the city background noise. Apologize if you can, but today we're doing this live interview. I don't usually do interviews live. I usually pre-record them, but talking with a friend, a guest, and also a contributor to the Conscious Resistance website. So for those of you who follow me at theconsciousresistance.com, you might have seen some of Johan's content. We're trying to get more of his content on the website. But you might have seen him on the YouTube channel or the Facebook page and elsewhere. And before we get started, I do want to remind everybody to bookmark theconsciousresistance.com. This is your home for all of my content, for you to find out like people like Johan and to find other people's work. You can watch my documentaries. You can download my books. All that stuff is available for free at theconsciousresistance.com. And it's better than relying on YouTube. I know most of you are probably watching through YouTube or Facebook right now. We're also live on Float. That's FLOTE.app/conscious resistance, and I'm thankful to anybody who chooses to leave Facebook right now and go watch on Float, or leave YouTube and go watch on Float. I appreciate that. Your comments will still show. We can still interact with you. And yeah, but you're also going to be doing it in a way by supporting a platform that doesn't censor people and that doesn't basically delete people. And that's one of the topics that we're going to be talking about with our guest, Johan. Let me just go ahead and bring on Johan. What's going on, brother?
Hey, Derek, man. Thanks for having me on. It's been a long time since I spoke to you. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, man. And I know we're about 10 hours apart, so it's 11 in the morning for me, and it's close to midnight for you?
Nope, it's 10 o'clock. That's fine.
Okay, cool. So it's not too late for you. I just want to make sure. Yeah, so you know, I was starting to say that you're one of the people specifically on our channel and just your work in general that has been censored. And, you know, we're going to get into all that in a moment. Before, though, I want to let everybody who doesn't know that I have talked with Johan at least once, maybe twice on the channel now. And of course, his content, as I said, is available on our network. If you want to go back and see those previous interviews, get to know about Johan, you can do so. And of course, your website is anarchyforfreedom.com.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, great. Perfect. So, all right, well, I'll hand it over to you now, brother, because I know it's been a little while since we talked. The main things I wanted to get across to everybody who might not have seen yet, for one, you know, you've been doing great work, and everybody that I've seen is very supportive. I think people are finally getting to see what the Conscious Resistance Network is, that we have people contributing from the U.S., of course. Now, myself in Mexico, we get to hear from our friends like the Freedom Cells in Australia. We get to hear from what's happening with you in India, and then hearing from our friends and brothers and sisters in the U.K. and Australia and elsewhere, for people to really see that this is a global network, and we're trying to show people who are exploring consciousness and spirituality, but also exposing corruption, and for people to realize, just as one example, Bill Gates has an agenda for the United States, but he has the same puppets over there in India, and you've been doing great work on that and other topics. But let's go ahead and start with the censorship. So you had two videos that you put out in the last month or so, and you had them on your channel, and you also cross-posted them on my channel. And they got deleted both places. I don't know if you got a strike, but I definitely got a strike on the Conscious Resistance, and we couldn't post or upload for a week. So talk a little bit about those videos and what the response was in India and what the response was in YouTube.
The reason you got a strike is because you already had a strike in the past, right? With that Iran video, which was like really old. But then my channel didn't have any strikes. So I got a strike for the second video, which luckily you were able to take down, because, you know, we kind of spoke about it, that do you want to take it off since I got a strike? So then you took it off and you didn't get that strike. But yeah, I mean, it's been pretty much a roller coaster ride out here since the last 2 months, at least with, so I'll start, I mean, I'll come to the censorship in a bit, but just to give people a little background, I started out with exposing how the Gates Foundation and the Rockefeller Foundation are basically controlling the COVID-19 response out here. And, you know, the entire public health system in general. I mean, they have their own people who are sitting on boards, which are basically dictating policy. and deciding, you know, how people are tested. You know, they're funding the grassroots workers. You know, in the US, the Rockefeller Foundation put out a document talking about the contact tracers and how they wanted to really like scale that up so that they could do this whole surveillance kind of program. This is the agenda. But then they're doing the same kind of stuff here. And for those of people who don't know, the head of the Rockefeller Foundation is actually like an Indian American. His name is Rajiv Shah. So he was on TV like, you know, 2-3 months back talking about how, you know, the network which they basically brought into existence. They're called ASHA workers out here for people in the West who aren't familiar. So they are these grassroots kind of workers who go into villages and basically, you know, do health screenings and different stuff like that. So they are using this network of, you know, local people in the villages to basically push their vaccine and contact tracing and all the agendas that they want to push on the rural people, like basically making sure deliveries aren't happening in villages and they're happening in the hospitals, and you know, so that the children can be vaccinated. Obviously, they sell the pitch that they want to help the people, but then they always have like a hidden sort of personal vested interest agenda behind that. So yeah, I started out with basically exposing that. I got a journalist on my channel who's been working on this issue since the last 10 to 15 years. I mean, I was personally surprised to find someone who was working on this issue, because many people in India aren't generally aware about the larger geopolitical machinations behind, you know, the things that are going on. But I was very lucky to find him, and I got him on, and you know, thankfully that interview hasn't been censored yet. You know, I don't want to jinx that, but I'm just mentioning it. But there's a lot of important information over there, even for the Western audience, because you know, people in the West kind of understand that, okay, you know, this agenda has really penetrated deep into the areas that they're living in. But you know, we are facing the same fate. We have the same kind of structure. We have the same infiltration tactics that these globalists use through public-private partnerships and things like that in order to take over and, like, you know, basically take over the bureaucrats and hijack and rig the entire system, control the regulators. It's like literally the same thing out here. You know, as I continue to investigate what's going on. So I started out with that, and you know, that was received quite well. It gained a lot of traction, so I was very happy with that. But then kind of as you know, we started moving forward, there was a call, you know, given by certain people who run bigger channels in our country and who are more popular but are talking about this stuff, to burn the mask. So our group gave it full support, and you know, it is our Mumbai group, like a couple of people from there, who basically burned the mask like one day before we did. And then they ended up going viral because you know, some prominent guy basically like shared it on Twitter, and then it was picked up by celebrities, and like, you know, people are saying all kinds of stuff about it and calling these people COVIDiots and the general ad hominem that goes on. But it reached a lot of people. I think it reached at least 10 to 20 million people, to be conservative. And in a frenzy, like all the social media platforms took it down. You know, they were on, my friends were on television, and the news basically, like, you know, they weren't there, but their video was playing and they were kind of twisting it and demonizing it. But then, so that was obviously taken down by YouTube. I did a solo video basically just burning my mask and explaining why I'm doing that. They took that down as well. Then we did a proper video, like, so in the aftermath of all that, we were approached by a couple of media outlets, one of them being Indian Express, which you can, your audience can go look up. So they're a mainstream media publication that basically approached us. And, you know, they asked us for our views and stuff. So three of us basically gave them like a 14-minute long interview. But you know how it is, right, Derek? They basically take a small part of their interview and then totally twist it and misrepresent it. So that's exactly what they did. I mean, I've been following, you know, conspiracy researchers and stuff. And, you know, they've always been talking about how the media is so compromised. But I got a really personal scoop of it with my own content. So we'd send them like a 14-minute video, but they chopped it off to like half a minute. They lied about one of the studies I mentioned, totally, like, you know, twisted the whole thing. So that hopeful video is obviously there on your channel. And I think I saw on BitChute, it's like one of the most seen videos as well on BitChute. So I was really happy with that, obviously. And we were quoting from government documents. We were quoting from the WHO. We were quoting from our own government health ministry's website and stuff. Like, they still have it up. Like, if someone goes to the Indian government's health website today and sees their FAQ, they still tell people that, you know, we're not advising everyone to wear masks. Whereas on the ground, it's a totally different situation. So, and then finally, coming to the end, I managed to get an interview with David Icke. And of course, like, I mean, I kind of had a hunch that it was going to be taken down, but I still wanted to, like, at least put it on YouTube for a day or two so it would gain traction. because I thought it was a really important interview and there's a lot of important information in there, at least for Indians, because, you know, the West, people in the West might be familiar with a lot of what he talks about, but I want to grow that awareness here to a larger and larger degree, which, you know, we are doing, but it needs to scale up a lot more, obviously. So that was taken down finally. So yeah, I mean, when it comes to censorship, the thing I don't understand, honestly, and I would like your speculation on this, is why would they go so, like, I mean, fanatically censor so many videos from a channel that barely has like 5,000 subscribers? I don't get it. Like, I've always seen censorship take place to other people, you know, when they've reached like 100,000, 200,000 subscribers, but I just couldn't wrap my head around why, you know, they would do it for such a small channel where like so few people are seeing. Yeah, that's about, you know, what's been going on in the last 1 to 2 months.
So I appreciate all that. I'm just going to kind of give a recap. I'm showing on the screen one of the videos for those who didn't get what Johan was saying there. I've done videos on this and talked about it too, that they deleted his original video, which is this one, India Rises Up Against Mandatory Masks. Of course, though, this is the thing I keep trying to tell you guys who are still on YouTube and Facebook. You can find these videos. They're still available on our BitChute channel. All of our videos are backed up on BitChute and Library. And I also download videos like this and have them all saved on a hard drive as well in case our channel is ever totally deleted. But this video still has 3,000 views on the first video that got deleted. Still, it's got 3,000 views on BitChute. And let me show a couple of the other ones that you have that I saved on BitChute. And again, if you haven't subscribed to us on BitChute, go to bitchute.com/consciousresistance and you can see this, including this interview with David Icke that Johan was just talking about, which I agree with you. I think it does have important content related to life in India and for Indian people. But I also think that people who are just curious about some of the things David Icke has to say about the world in general will find value in this interview. And it's nearly 2 hours long. It's doing pretty good. It's got a couple thousand views on there, as well as some more views on Library. And then here's the second mask video where Johan and his friends actually had a chance to respond to some of the claims, because what I thought was crazy, man, and this, you asked, why would they go after your channel? Your channel's not the biggest channel, but you're doing great content. I think it's the fact that it started to go viral. And, you know, like you said, it got shared by some bigger names in India on Twitter and some celebrities, and things are going out there. Anytime a message like that is, you know, breaking past their control paradigm, I think they're going to freak out and probably just start slamming down as much as they can. So it's like, okay, it's on this big website, take that down or delete that. And they try to maybe find the source of it and just get straight to it. But it's clear that your work on the masks, because especially the second one where you and your friend go through the evidence and kind of really rationally and logically, and like you said, you show the Indian government studies themselves as well as other studies that are available, and they can't debate you on the facts. I think that you, if I'm not mistaken, I think that you even had some actual websites try to fact check the video.
I was just going to mention that to you, but I got an exclusive fact check, actually. So, you know, I used to see, like, say, for example, like Global Research or a prominent like you, Mind Unleashed, and a couple other media outlets, you know, you'd get your exclusive fact check because you're like a big portal and people are going. But then, like, my channel's video got an exclusive fact check from one of the mainstream publications from here.
Yeah, so I think
that's surprised to see that as well, honestly. Yeah,
I think that's telling, man. If they're feeling the need to go ahead and fact check you and go to that extreme length because they want to try to convince other people, it means that they know that people are listening. Clearly, your video was going viral, even just on my channel before YouTube was taking it down. It was doing pretty well and people were very interested. I mean, I don't know. I hope that you do notice that people here in the US and in the States and I mean, just in general, I think in North America and outside of India do care about what's going on, not only on the human level, but you're doing a lot of great work, man. And you're doing a great job of breaking news that we really wouldn't hear about, you know, if it wasn't for yourself and some of the other journalists and people that you're connected to and the interviews that you're doing. You've been doing lots of good stuff on that. And then, of course, we mentioned I'm showing also these videos that are available on Library. Just trying to reiterate that point, guys. You can still get the videos. If I play this video, YouTube will probably take this video down that we're doing right now. So I can't even play it. But they're both available. If you just go to BitChute and scroll down or just search India, you'll find some of the videos that Johan has done. But let's start to talk a little bit more about, well, first, did you have anything else you wanted to say on the censorship aspect?
No, that's pretty much it. I mean, like, honestly, the takeaway was I was surprised, but then I always knew this was coming. You know, that's the reason I've built my community on Telegram since the beginning. That's the reason I've always had alternatives, you know, so people can, it kind of stays backed up. And our Telegram community is like growing quite tremendously. I've reached out to other bigger channels, and, you know, we're all working behind the scenes kind of together to pool people in one place. So I'm really happy that's happening, because I always foresaw the censorship coming. Not so early, but I did see it coming. But then, I mean, it came now. So what can you do about it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we all knew it was coming. And here we are dealing with it in really crazy ways. If you can, man, go ahead and type in your Telegram channel. If you have an easy link that people can join through, if you put that in the chat, I'll put that on the screen.
I'm so sorry. It's only for Indians.
Okay. That's fine. Yeah. You will. Hey, if anybody listening is in India, please do find the Telegram channel. And just follow the website if you want to keep up with Johan's work. So let's talk a little bit about, more specifically about the response, the lockdowns, and just, we talked about this a couple months back. When was that interview? Maybe back in April or something.
Five months ago.
Yeah. So I would like to see, first off, go check out that interview if you want to see how things were back then. But a more recent update, like I sent you a story a couple of weeks ago that I found that was talking about one specific group of Indians and saying that they were going to now be under surveillance because of COVID spreading. And you were kind of just telling me a little bit more about what's going on. So let everybody know what's the situation. We're now in September. This thing has dragged on way more than 2 weeks. And you know, most people are kind of getting used to masks or used to even various forms of lockdown. Some places are kind of reopening. The story, of course, is falling apart, but the mainstream is completely ignoring it. What's happening for you in India, where you're at, and then generally for Indian people?
So the lockdowns, I mean, they were pretty draconian at first, as most people know. And in the prior interview, you know, we kind of described how the migrant workers had to face a lot of issues, and, you know, people from all sectors honestly had to face a lot of issues. So if you ask me the situation right now, it's improved quite a lot. The state has opened up quite a lot of things. I mean, they've not improved like a lot more since the last 2 months, because until the last 2 months, they kind of eased things up. You know, people were getting out and, you know, just getting along, basically. And since the last 2 months, they've opened up like a few things, like some restaurants have opened up now, and, you know, in most parts of the country, like, gyms have opened up with certain standard operating procedures and stuff. So on that front, yes, it has opened up quite a bit. Interstate travel, you know, it's becoming easier now, where like most states still require people to get tested. Like, so you have to get a test like 96 hours before you actually move to another state. So that is an issue. But at least within the state, like I went out of my city, like to another place within the state itself, like off-grid kind of place. So it wasn't a hassle going there like a month back. It was quite easy. So on that front, yeah, things have opened up quite a bit. And to tell you the sentiment on the ground, since we have groups kind of growing and this information is spreading, it's not just me, you know, like, of course, I would feel very burdened if it was just me and like one, two other people doing this. But there are a couple of big YouTubers out here as well. And there are a couple of doctors who have come out, you know, kind of speaking out against this. So the West has their Andrew Kaufmans and their Rashid Buttars and stuff. But, you know, even we have doctors out here, like prominent doctors. One of them, his name is Tarun Kothari. And there are a couple of others as well who have come out. And then there are a lot of doctors who are basically in touch with these doctors, but then they're scared to come out and actually speak out about what's going on, because it's the standard thing. Like, you know, they lose their job or they lose their salary or whatever that is. So, yeah, there are other people working on this as well. And, you know, we've managed to raise a good amount of awareness in the country, I would think. At least the word has gotten out that, you know, maybe there is something messed up with what is going on. And mainly, like, a lot of the information that's being shared among people, like, say, within slums or, you know, just lower middle class or just the common people in general. A lot of these hospital videos have been going viral over here, because there's a lot of stuff with respect to, like, organ smuggling. Multiple cases are coming out. Like, I'm not just saying this based on one or two cases, but there have been multiple cases, like, time after time again, where, you know, we've heard stories about they came and forcefully tested someone, they took them up, they took them to the hospital, basically, and then these people who had like very mild symptoms, they landed up dying in 2 days. And then the common story that keeps coming up, you know, I've heard it multiple times, is that they were injected with something and then they just died the next day. So most of the time, it's not because of COVID that these people are dying. You know, the treatments are problematic as well. Remdesivir has a lot of side effects. The ventilator is not the ideal thing you want the patient to go to first. Like, it's a good thing, you know, for end stages if the situation gets really worse and out of control. But you don't want to start with that. But then again, there are incentives to put people on ventilators and stuff. And, you know, the medicines being prescribed even to people who are just asymptomatic, you know, even they are being prescribed antibiotics and stuff, which is not really needed, you know. So the treatment is obviously playing a big role. And those kind of videos have been going viral quite a bit here. Like, good luck or whatever you want to call it. We got access to an Instagram page, which basically had like 500 followers. And then one of these videos we shared about like one of these hospital scams landed up going viral, and it, I think, reached 30 lakh views or something. I don't know what, how would you, I think 30 million and 30 lakh is the same thing. But yeah, it really landed up exploding, and we got like 10,000 followers over there in a day. And I'm running that page now. So, I mean, we did landed up, you know, getting a large kind of following over there because of that video. So yeah, my point is just to say that different kinds of videos are going viral. You know, whoever on the ground, like whenever I've traveled, whichever cabbie I've spoken to, you know, whichever just like common people I've spoken to who aren't indoctrinated really, but who can see through what's going on because they have less programming on them. I've seen that trend a lot. Like, it's a lot easier to convince people who don't come with all this additional baggage about, oh, the WHO said this, and, you know, the CDC said this, and they, like, our country's premier health institution said this. So it's much easier to like get the message across to them. And we've been working on the ground as well. So, you know, we've printed a lot of flyers out here. Like, our city itself has like 50,000 flyers that we printed, and we've been sending them off to like people who want to go and distribute them on the ground. You know, I have videos coming up where we go and ask people on the street about what they think about what's going on in general. So we are doing a lot of on ground work as well as like, you know, trying to use all the online platforms we have. You know, I've got the idea of Freedom Cells out to Indian people, you know, which we'll discuss a little bit later into this interview when we talk about solutions, I think. But, you know, I've got a couple of channels to kind of, you know, share the importance that people need to come together and like need to connect with activists in the city, and we need to think about food and defense and different things like that. So I've been getting that message out as well. And, you know, people are taking action on it. So overall, yeah, I mean, I do see things changing. Like, I was just very happy this morning to see that in my city itself, like on the sea face where people usually go to stroll in the evenings and stuff, 50% of people aren't wearing their masks, and they're arguing with the cops and the like local commission people as to why they don't want to wear them. And there are much important issues that they need to focus on. Why are you fining us for masks? So there's general like discontentment building among the people over here. There have been protests that have taken place in couple places regarding, like, you know, mandatory testing and the WHO policies and things like that. We've had certain farmers and stuff protest in Punjab. In our city, in my city itself, you know, we had not a protest, but just like a spontaneous kind of gathering of people next to a station where they just wanted to like go and open up the trains, because these people, like, they have jobs, but they're not, you know, they can't travel because they can't afford the cars and the cabs and stuff. And then the only way they can get around is closed, even though they have a job waiting for them on the other side, which I think is like honestly pathetic that they're doing this when they opened up everything. Like, why just, and they open for government employees, you know, it's just the normal people who can't go and use the trains yet. So the public transport is still shut, which is why people are having a problem congregating and kind of getting together. But, you know, we're still trying to think of ways to work around that. So we are having protests in our city, and we are planning big protests. You know, there have been nationwide calls issued by a couple of people. We're planning the first protest on 2nd October, and then, you know, there'll be more from there on. So we're not really in a spirit to like take all this stuff now. You know, we've had enough, and then people are like, you know, we have the people kind of getting disenfranchised and angry with what's going on, and we're seeing that convert to some kind of action as well. The only thing is that we need to like bring everyone together and like on a common platform or something, so we can really move forward with this. Because, you know, everything's being censored now. People, like, even on social media platforms, you can't rely on Facebook. So the only thing I'm mainly happy about is that I built my Telegram community and focused on that since the beginning, because, you know, we have all the people over there now who are pretty much active. Yeah. So that's how things have been going on.
Yeah, lots of good info there. And I appreciate that you answered the question about how India is doing, not so much focused on what the Indian government is doing, which is obviously important, but more on what you and your, you know, your allies are choosing to do out there, which is really awesome. And it has been great to see the UK London, we had Germany, we had, I think there was some in like Slovenia and just random countries across Europe. And in even some places in like Costa Rica, I know there's people that have pushed back and elsewhere who are starting to push back against the lockdowns and the masks. So it's great to hear that there's a similar kind of pattern happening in India. Unfortunately, it doesn't seem to be
and I forgot to mention, we have cases going to the court as well. We're working to file multiple PILs on different things in the courts. So we're using that as well. Like we're not leaving any stone unturned. We're just doing as much as we can, honestly, right now.
Yeah, and that's what we need right now. I mean, you're right that I definitely want to talk with you about solutions. And so we're going to start to get there in just a moment, but because you already kind of went into some of the things and I want to reemphasize those, that if you are a person listening to this and you're concerned about, well, if we know all these things about the PCR test, if we know all these things about the masks, if we've seen all this, you know, lack of millions of people dying in the streets, you know, it's the same thing out here in Mexico, Johan, that there, the average person probably very much doesn't believe a lot of the crap that they're told. We see a lot of people wearing masks and some people not wearing them. But I think most people are unfortunately just sort of going along. When you talk to them, though, they are skeptical or they're just kind of like they don't think it's that big of a deal. But in the U.S., for one reason or another, there's just, I think, a lot of acquiescence to it. So it's good to hear, though, that what's going on in India, you know, mimics what's happening elsewhere, because we need more and more people pushing back. And the thing that you mentioned that I think is so crucial is not relying on Facebook. Again, if you're an activist who's hearing this conversation or just an individual and you're concerned about a lot of the programs that are going on and what's coming next, then I think you need to start thinking in terms of who can you talk to within your family and friends, the people that you love and care about, that you maybe want to just have an open-hearted conversation and just as honestly as you can, this is what I care about, this is what I'm concerned about, please pay attention to this. And also being willing to get out there on the streets and talk to people, because I know for most of my activism, that's where I had the most success, was being out in the streets, talking to people, handing flyers to people, having conversations, handing them DVDs, documentaries of all kinds of things, and really connecting face-to-face and trying to build on that ground level. And I think that you're doing a really great job of that, you know, using your own strategies, but also it's essentially taking the Freedom Cell strategy that we've covered here on this channel and using it through Telegram and of course in the real world and multiplying across your area. And that's the goal, is that each of us can start to build locally. Maybe we have two or three friends that are the crazy conspiracy theorists and you start with them. What strategies can you do? You know, can you go out and pass out flyers? Can you go talk to people? Can you organize protests? What sort of things can you do in addition to trying to use social media to your advantage when possible? What are the strategies and steps that you're willing to do? And we are at such a crucial point that if people are not ready and willing to be uncomfortable, because I know that going to the streets, and I'm sure you can attest to this too, Johan, that going to the streets sometimes isn't the most fun experience. As far as first, you might feel a little nervous or apprehensive, at least in the beginning. After a while, I feel like you get over it and you're just like, whatever, I got to talk to people. But sometimes for many of us, it can be unnerving. It can be, you know, there could be some insecurity and like, I don't really want to talk to people, or what are they going to think about me? I'm going to talk to them about this mask and they're going to call me crazy, or they're going to yell at me, you know, all these sort of concerns. But if you can push past that and get to that first real conversation you have with some random stranger on the street, and you recognize that this person sees what you see, or at the very least, they're open to it, they're not screaming at you, and they're curious, that is, it's almost an addictive feeling. You wanted like, I need more of that. I need to talk to people. I need to keep spreading this information. I need to connect with as many people as possible. I know it was for me. I don't know if you had a similar experience, but I just want to emphasize that, you know, don't rely on social media anymore. The age of relying on social media, I think, has been over for a number of years, but now it's becoming extremely clear to so many people that we have to get on the ground and in the streets and talk to people using whatever mediums, whatever skills. We all have different skills and expertise. Whatever you got, it's time to put it forward to this goal of getting people to question things, because thankfully people are questioning. Thankfully, there is pushback, as you were saying from your experience in India, Johan. But at the same time, there are a lot of people who are buying the program, and we cannot ignore that. So we have to reach, my belief at least, is we have to reach as many of those people as possible before they start getting these vaccines out to people and affecting them in all kinds of ways. Anything you want to say on that, Johan?
Yeah, just on the flyer note, we kind of became a little creative and, you know, our people started to basically like ask their newspaper people if they would take a certain amount to just slip the flyers in. So we've been trying to get it out that way as well, because, you know, I go out on the streets and talk to people, but then it's like if you spend 1.5 hours doing it, you can speak to like 10 groups of people, you know, like so maybe 20-30 people that you can cover. But then if you get it out in some way where either you're at least distributing it in your locality, like just going and slipping it into people's houses or getting it through the newspapers or something, then I think, you know, you can reach a lot more people doing that. So we've been encouraging people to do that. And yeah, I mean, just overall, I pretty much agree with your sentiment that there are a lot of people who are still asleep who can't see this. But on the other side, like the people who get what's going on is because that things are starting to move so fast now that we see the urgency. Like, for example, you know, we have like one of these Gates connected puppets over here called Nandan Nilekani. Okay, so he helped Gates with the Aadhaar project as well, and with the demonetization, like, you know, this whole move to go cashless and everything. So he's kind of one of the assets of the global cult out here that's helping to, you know, bring a lot of this stuff into existence. And, you know, this guy's going on mainstream media and talking about how they want to use this biometric ID surveillance grid that they've established in order to roll out the vaccine. So, you know, people like us have been warning that, you know, they're going to use this in order to, you know, starve people in the future who are dissidents, who don't agree with them. And, you know, to push out mandatory vaccines and stuff like that. We always saw this coming. And, you know, this guy is kind of talking on television now about using that whole, you know, structure that they have, the foundation that they have in order to roll out the vaccines in the future. And then that being a condition for whether you're allowed to go to places and whether you're not. And, you know, guess who was talking about it 6 months ago? Bill Gates, right? So this guy is working with the Gates Foundation and the Rockefeller Foundation on a lot of projects. So, he's owned by these people totally. And then we have couple of other characters in our country who are really working with the Rockefeller Foundation and the Gates Foundation. So I've traced those people down. I mean, it's not recent, like I've always known about them, but, you know, I'm doing more work to educate people about like who the local players out here. My point is just that, you know, since the urgency is kind of speeding up, you know, we have bills passed recently, which I haven't had the time to review fully. But the gist of it is they basically like make it easier for these multinational corporations to basically come and buy out farmlands and, like, you know, get into the entire food business through these big retail spaces and stuff. And I don't have anything, like, you know, against if someone's voluntarily acquired the wealth and they want to go and buy out a farmland. I mean, I'm not against that. I'm an anarcho-capitalist personally. But then, you know, since we understand the agenda, we see where that's going, because, you know, these big business houses in the name of like competition and stuff, they basically want to monopolize the entire global production system through the technocracy that, you know, they're trying to move in, which even they're complicit in, and they're playing their part to make it happen. So these are the kind of players like the Amazon and the Googles and everything who are going to be your, you know, future producers of everything on the planet with all the small and medium size businesses wiped out, which is obviously what's happening with these whole lockdowns and all of that's going on. So yeah, I mean, we see this divide right now, mainly, you know, people who are getting it and the people who are like going deeper and deeper into the slumber. But, you know, I just don't want to give up on anyone, so we are doing our best to, you know, just spread the word and get the word out.
Absolutely important. So as we start to wrap up, Johan, I want us to key in even more on solutions. It's pretty much already been permeating our conversation just because it's a part of everything that you do and that we try to focus on. But specifically, I'd like for you to talk about the solutions that clearly, you know, you mentioned putting flyers in the newspapers and in people's houses and just all kinds of ways to get on the streets and organize with people. And that's absolutely important. And then, of course, you're producing great content, trying to reach people that way. You're using multiple social media platforms. You're doing all that stuff. What I want to focus on for a moment is the technocratic aspect, which you kind of touched on just for a moment, because for those who are unaware, the system that you're describing, it's called Aadhaar, right? Or Aadhaar, is that correct? The foundation?
Yes.
So go ahead.
Yeah, Aadhaar. Yeah.
Okay. So that it's a biometric system that is around the entire country, correct?
Yes. And Corbett, like if you see his Bill Gates series, like he went, I think in the third part, he exposed quite a lot of stuff with respect to like how the Gates Foundation and this character I described called Nandan, you know, he was involved with making that whole thing happen. And there's a big nexus of like French intelligence and the CIA behind that as well, you know, which I haven't done content on, but I'm aware of that fact. Yeah.
So we have that system backed by Bill Gates, bringing in other Indian stakeholders to sell it to the Indian people. And they've already got the whole nation on biometrics, which is something that, say, people in the U.S. are concerned is coming and starting to roll out. We're seeing COVID pass and the Border Patrol and DHS rolling out biometrics and all this stuff. just as specific as you can be, whatever thoughts come to mind, what do you do as an activist in that world? Because you know that my last book, How to Opt Out of the Technocratic State, was very much talking about what's going on in India, China, South Korea, elsewhere, what's coming into the US, and how can we be free, powerful individual people in a world that is trying to constantly monitor and track our actions. What steps have you as an activist or as an individual had to take to sort of alter your behavior or to just deal with the fact that that system exists? And as you say now it's going to attempt to be used to roll out vaccines and to punish people who don't participate and all these kinds of things. How does that affect your activism?
I mean, we always saw this coming, right? So I always knew that this was, eventually coming because people are so asleep. So there's obviously going to be no resistance to stop it. Although there were a couple of privacy activists and, a couple of people who were making noise about the issue early on, but that didn't really go anywhere. And the Supreme Court did pass a bill saying that, Aadhaar can't be mandatory and you can't force it on people. So they did pass that judgment. But in practice, it doesn't really work out like that, especially we see now with the vaccines that how it's going to work out. We are fighting on the legal front, obviously, so we'll see how that goes, but you know how it works, right? Even if a court passes a judgment or something, but then they always find a way to find loopholes and play around with that. So I always knew this was coming, to be honest, and my focus has always been to tell people, to tell the people who are in my local group as well, the more resources that we have in our control, just the factors of production that we have in our control, the wealth, obviously, like the capital accumulation, but then also like land and food and just the things you need to survive, some kind of water system, just taking care of that. So we have activists who are kind of in the interior areas of the country who have built these kind of things and, they've sort of working on off-grid kind of solutions. So obviously the implications are that when this kind of system comes into place, from your normal manufacturer, you're going to have to pay taxes to them, which is going to fund your enslavement. At the same time, you're not going to be able to go out and do business with them if you don't have your vaccine or whatever. If you don't have your stamp on your hand that Mr. Gates wants to, put so that they can scan your barcode or whatever. We obviously know that's coming as well. So the only way to get around that is obviously we need to build our own networks. We need to make sure that we're growing our own food, at least for the basics are kind of ensured. There are local solutions with respect to communications, like there are mesh networking devices that are kind of expensive, but still, if people really want to find workarounds and be able to communicate in a short area, there's GoTenna, which is, put out these mesh devices, which I personally have as well. Like I ordered them really long back, but they're good for communicating in city environments with at least a kilometer or something, which is kilometers, I think 1.2 miles or something, or the other way around. 1.8 miles is, I'm not sure about that, but it's somewhere around that. But it's good to communicate within that range, and then you can have hops as well. So if you have multiple people in the area using that kind of system, you can find hops around. So I have a couple of those devices, but then there are very few people like-minded living next to me locally. All the way there. There's some people are starting to wake up and kind of see what's going on. But then, we need more people living together in some kind of place in order to be able to use that kind of system. So there are solutions available, if people really want to come down to it. And we're going to have to make some sacrifices as well, right? So if you really not want to take your vaccine or something, you're going to have to draw that line. You're going to have to decide, okay, if it's going to come down to this, so what am I going to do? How am I going to deal with law enforcement? People need to think about all these things, but I would say the more strength in numbers we have and the more we can do with respect to just standing up for each other, which is something I think another place where these kind of cells and groups can help. So if something is happening to your local activist, someone who's doing media or just making content, you can always call them to cover the issue immediately. You can call a bunch of people just to stand with you because they have an incentive as well, right? If they're not going to come and stand with you, later, when the state is going to come for them, they're not going to have anyone to stand with them as well. So people who at least understand the urgency of the issue, we need to use the power of numbers. I think that's what it comes down to. If it really has to get violent, we can't do anything other than use self-defense. So if it has to get that way, people are going to have to make their own choices. But honestly, my line is with the vaccine. So I'm not taking it regardless of what anyone does. But I just think that, these are some of the things that people can start thinking about. Mainly the overlying blueprint is just we need to get more resources in the hands of people who think like us. So that way, you know, it's easier for, say, dissidents who they just can't like wipe them out if we have control over the factors of production ourselves.
Yeah, and so what you're pointing at is that people need to be more forward thinking. They need to think, as you said, getting practical resources, water, other things that be, land, things of value, and keeping those in the hands of the people who are thinking like us and who are not saying, hey, I want to be subjected to a vaccine or a mask mandate or whatever the heck you want to say, because now you've got me on this biometric digital control grid and you can essentially lock me out if I don't participate. I mean, we already have people in the United States floating the idea that people's insurance should be raised if they don't get the vaccine. They shouldn't be able to travel. They should, you know, all these crazy things. And that is the way that this is going to spread globally. It's through the social engineering. It might not necessarily be with stormtroopers at your door, like we're kind of seeing in Australia. It could be more subtle ways where you just basically can't operate. But if, and I believe that's what is happening. And if you do have resources, if you do have these networks, you're going to be in a better position than somebody who has just sat there and watched it all happen and took no efforts to free themselves from this matrix, this control grid. So that is, I think.
And obviously, I forgot to mention that, you know, we need to use sound money as well, right? Like, so I would encourage people to like start thinking about getting the money out of the banks. Because if you want to talk about resources and like having resources in our hand, if they're going to do a bail-in on us and the bank's going to collapse, you know, we're not going to have the resources to operate. So obviously, like, I would think this is the time when people really need to start thinking about like how to secure their wealth and stuff and have more stuff with us so that we're not subjected to like control. And I agree with you, like the vaccines are probably not going to be mandatory. They're going to make it in a way where you have, if you have to travel or you want to go out of your state, or like, they're just the same thing with masks or these passes that, that they're issuing right now, right? Like right now as well, like if I want to go travel to some state, I have to get a test. Like how difficult is that to just replace it with a vaccine? That's probably the way they're going to do it. I don't think we're necessarily going to see like law enforcement showing up at our door. Although I think that's a concern for our country because of the percentage of people who are awake. So if there are many people who are awake, they probably use this kind of tactic. But if there are many people who just take it, then they might just roll it out that way. So I don't want to speculate too much, but yeah, either way, you know, wherever it goes, it's going to be mandatory in implication, like not in, you know, like literal application. That's what I mean. Yeah.
Exactly. It'll be practically mandatory, whether it's, you know, at the force of a gun or not, because you won't be able to operate in the ways that most of us have become accustomed to, you know, walking about freely and shopping where you want and traveling if you want, without their vaccine. So we know the agenda, but now it's time to do something about it. And Johan, you are somebody who is continuing to do so much about it. I really appreciate your work, brother. I've told you since the beginning, and I'm happy to have you a part of our network. Everybody check out the website, anarchyforfreedom.com. Connect to his, all of his channels. I'm not even gonna say connect to his YouTube channel. Find him elsewhere and make sure that you can get his videos. And if you do wanna find the videos, you can find them on our website, as well as his, the censored videos, including his recent interview with David Icke. And also just want to remind you guys to bookmark theconsciousresistance.com to get my content, Johan's content, and plenty of other people on our network. And Johan, I don't know if I told you this, but we have a Spotify account now for The Conscious Resistance. So I've been uploading all my audio versions of my work, including this interview, will get uploaded to Spotify. If you want to send me the audio for your clips, we can get those on Spotify as well. And just another way for
I've been a bit slacking on that because of time issues, but now I have someone who's going to be uploading my content and stuff, so it's going to be much easier. So I will make sure that it's uploaded on your channels as well.
Cool, man. Perfect. I just want to make sure everybody has an opportunity to find your work, because I really do think you're doing important stuff. And you know, I'm here in Mexico now, and somebody recently contacted me and sort of letting me know the lay of the land. And they were saying there's not really a truther community in Mexico, Spanish speaking or English speaking, that there are a few YouTube channels here and there. And this person was basically just saying, like, you know, we need more people like myself here in Mexico. And it's just, it's interesting. But I do think that it is a global movement against freedom. These people are trying to control all of us, Indian, Australian, American, Mexican, whatever. And so we need people in all these regions to start questioning and pushing back if we're going to have a chance of not only saving India, saving Australia, saving pockets of the US and saving some of Mexico, but making sure that our brothers and sisters around the world are aware of this agenda so they are not subjected to it and have an opportunity to live the lives that I think they deserve. So I'm going to leave it there for now. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. Find Johan on anarchyforfreedom.com. And until next time, remember, you are powerful, you are beautiful, and you are free. Peace.
This is Derek Bros. Derek Bros. Derek Bros. This is Derek Bros of the Conscious Resistance. I'm here in Standing Rock.
That man is wanted in 5 different countries: Chile, Argentina, Brazil.
We've been fighting a long time. We've all lost so very much. So many loved ones gone.
stay alive. You have no idea